You're listening to Stream Justice, a youth-led discussion on civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is Shania Brimage. I'm an 18-year-old student at City Charter High School.
I am Rihanna Graham. I'm a senior at Alderdice High School.
I'm Khalees Campbell. I'm a sophomore at Barack Obama Academy.
I'm Allie Rose, and I'm a senior at Barack Obama Academy.
I'm Jordan Dixon. I'm a senior at Westinghouse.
I'm Mandiah Fielder. I'm 18, and I go to City Charter High School. I'm a senior as well. As you guys know, it's the new year. It's 2016. Woo-hoo, everybody.
Woo-hoo.
Excitement about
Snaps.
That. I know everybody has New Year's resolutions. The definition of a New Year's resolution is actually a promise that you make to start doing something good or to stop doing something bad on the first day of the new year. And I think a lot of people get annoyed with the new year because everybody's always saying, you know, new year, new me, yada, yada, yada. But many people do not change and do not do the things that they will say. But then again, many people do the things that they will say and do accomplish the New Year's resolutions that they do put. And I think just it's motivation to make the new year better than what it was before, which I think is very important. And for me, my personal New Year's resolutions are to stop cracking my fingers, to graduate, to go to my college of my dreams, and to travel. So now on our Hot Topic segment, we're going to be talking about Sandra Bland and Tamir Rice.
So as you know, last July, 28-year-old Sandra Bland was pulled over for failing to use her turning signal, and she was arrested. And 3 days after she was arrested, she was found in her cell dead. It said that, or the reports were that she committed suicide, but a lot of people would beg to differ. And I guess a lot of people are angry, especially her mother, because there was a lack of indictment. Nobody had to face any charges because of what happened. No one got in trouble, and that's kind of a consistent thing in cases like this.
And for Tamir Rice, back in November, he and his friends were playing on the street, and his sister, and he had like a fake toy gun, and somebody had called the police saying, you know, there's a strange black child on the street, but I think he has a fake gun. And when the police pulled up, within 3 seconds, he was shot and killed, and the police officers did not even try to, like, save his life or do anything, and they threatened to handcuff his sister. So that's another example of what Ali was saying about how police officers aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. I think it's, like, extremely important to recognize that the justice system, the criminal justice system, mm-hmm. is supposed to, I guess, bring justice, essentially. Like, and I think it's kind of scary to think that someone could be pulled over for pretty much no reason. Mm-hmm. I don't see any justice in that situation. And the fact that nobody got in trouble for what happened, I think that... Ooh, I don't like this. I don't like being live.
So, yeah, back on what you were saying about no charges being dropped, the officers in the Tamir Rice case weren't charged at all. There was a minor charge, but I don't think anything has gone through with that. There was a widespread because of that, because he was only 12 years old, and how are you threatened by a 12-year-old once you can see that he's a little boy, and you didn't even try to say, hey, put that down, put your hands up, nothing. You didn't even try to see what was actually going on, and within the 3 seconds that you pulled up, you shot this kid, and you had, like, no resentment towards it. I'm not sure if they actually had no resentment towards it, but that's what I think. It just shows that there's unjust handlings in the police system.
Yeah.
It's sad.
That the system was made up to protect injustices, mm-hmm. especially against black and brown people. There was an uproar because a lot of people believe that police are the reason that Sandra is dead. There was a hashtag that started on Twitter, and it's called, if I die in police custody, and you fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And most people said, if I die in police custody, I didn't commit suicide.
And I took part in that hashtag on Twitter. I
me
said
too.
So many different
so
things. It was like, it was really a wake-up call for me, just like, if I die in police custody, like, let this be known that I didn't kill myself or that I value my life. And I think that's important because it shows that we value our lives and what we're doing. And many times we're told, you know, don't do this if you get pulled over, don't do this, put your hands up, make sure they can see your hands. But you can tell somebody that so much, but something could still happen. And, you know, it's just sad.
You can take all the precautions in the world, but when you really get yourself into the situation, there really isn't any... You don't know what's going to happen. You know, you can put your hands on the wheel. I remember for a school trip, with one of my favorite teachers, my acting teacher, Miss Guffey. Love her. Shout out to you. We went to go see a show at the Kelly Strayhorn Theater. For the life of me, I cannot remember the name. I feel so bad about it. But one of the skits was this Muslim girl, and she was talking about how, you know, she was pulled over. The skit was that she got pulled over, and then when she was reaching for, like, her ID or something, the cop shot her, and then the cop was like, oh, yeah, she was resisting arrest. I'm just going to say she was resisting arrest. And that really opened my eyes to, like, how often does that really happen?
Mm-hmm. Just like in the Walter Scott case, the police officer ended up shooting Walter Scott in the back, I believe, 7 times. And whenever he was asked about what happened, he said that that Mr. Scott, like, argued with him and tried to take his taser and, like, shoot him, or I guess, like, shock him with it. And but then you see inside the video, like, once it was released, that he chased him and then planted the taser on him. And he still argues with it, but it's kind of crazy to think about all the things that could be happening that people don't know about because they weren't on film.
Which is why I think body cameras are such, like, are so important. I think they need to be, like, why weren't cops already wearing them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could have solved so many crimes and so many, like, misunderstandings could have been, what's the word? Not misunderstood.
Avoided. I feel you. I think this system is kind of in place to protect police. I think it was created to protect police, racist police. I think, I think that it wasn't, like, corrupted by a few bad apples. I think that the whole system is pretty dirty, and they can get away with whatever they want to, because it's your word against theirs, and theirs is always going to come out on top.
I wanted to say that something that really, you know, like, I've noticed a lot was if, like, I would be scrolling down, like, Facebook, and if, like, the people's friends would actually record, like, the situations that their friends were in with police. The one guy, he was... and I believe he was in college, and he said he was being pulled over because he was a young black male in a nice vehicle. And I think that's, like, a lot of the issues. Like, they see someone, I think, well, in my personal opinion, I think when police see a young black male, specifically, in a nice vehicle, I think that they think they sell drugs or do something illegal to have that car instead of working hard, which I'm sure most people do, to get what they have. But then that really just gets me a lot, because it shouldn't be like that. You know, you can't, maybe they come from a wealthy family or they don't think like that. It's kind of bad how America in general is today.
It's really difficult when it's just like, even with basic things like, you know, being followed around a store or being around a gas station because you're black, they just think, oh, you're going to, you know, you're going to try to steal something. Or if I'm walking down the street with, like, my hoodie up, people will, like, look at me, and I can see them just, like, looking at me. And then some people will, like, cross the street and just be still, like, looking at me as I'm passing them and they're on the other side. And honestly, sometimes I just want to be like, what, what's up, what, come on. But, you know, then I'm like, no, I can't do that, because, you know, then something could happen to me, and it would be like, oh, I instigated it, and oh, I was, you know, threatening. There's the word, threatening the person. So
it's almost like your skin is a weapon and you walk around with it all the time and you can't escape it.
It's actually sad when you have to worry about your little cousins and your little brother growing up in this world and just worrying about what can happen to them once they get to the age when police feel like it's okay to torment them. Like, as I watch my little brother grow up, it's just like there's already things going on right now in his class where he feels like a white girl in his class is smarter than him just because he's white. But my little brother has better grades, like better test scores. And then I feel like it's just on our backs to help them and to raise them up so they see the world for what it actually is and so they know the right things to do so they never have to be put in that a bad type of situation.
The sad part is it's not just, I mean, of course, either way it's sad, but it's really disheartening that it's not just black men, but it's black women. And mm-hmm. a lot of times we don't even talk about the black women that are, like, facing these injustices. And, like, I think it's specifically because they don't want to they don't want it to be the headlines. They'd rather put the same black man over and over again. Not that they don't deserve any, like, recognition or, like, any type of remorse or anything like that, but, like, a lot of times names like Sandra Bland or Akia Boyd or, like, you know what I mean, they get lost in the mix. And so it's kind of scary just to know that I'm walking around with a target on my back no matter who I am. Like, there's nothing you can do, be a woman, be a man, be anything, have a shaved head, have long hair. There's nothing you can do to escape it.
So I'm in stage crew at school, and we have to wear all black. And after a show, when we go out to eat, but I asked my mom one day, I'm like, is it actually kind of safe to go out with all black into a store? Like, are people going to look at me weird? Like, I'm dressed in a black hoodie, black pants, black shoes. Am I going to be targeted just because of what I'm wearing and my skin color? And it's like that I'm 15, and I have to worry about this just because of what I'm wearing and the skin color that I am.
I think it's said that you have to keep worrying about younger brothers and younger sisters. And even I don't have any siblings, but I worry about, you know, my friends, you know, younger siblings. Because like you said, Tamir Rice was 12. Like, you know, when I was 12, I never would have imagined that if I was just outside playing, a cop would come up and shoot me. But it's sad now that probably some black kids are, and then some parents have to tell their kids, you know, you can't, don't do a certain thing, or, you know, be in by this certain time, or don't go over to, you know, this certain part of the neighborhood because, you know, maybe there's a lot of white people there, maybe there's a certain kind of people there. You know, it's sad that you have to take all these precautions to just to, you know, avoid your son getting killed.
All right, we're going to wrap up that subject. We'll be back in a few minutes.
One day when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours.
Oh. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, a youth-led discussion on civil rights past, present, and future in honor of Dr. King. With us is Shania Kalise, Indaya Ali, Jordan, and Rihanna.
So we're going to start with Black excellence. Amanda Stenberg, most of you may know her as Rue from The Hunger Games, recently had an interview with Solange for Teen Vogue magazine. In the beginning, Solange admitted that she did not prepare well for the interview because she says there's a quote-unquote secret language shared among black girls. And once you get to read most of the interview, you understand the secret language. They start with Amanda. She speaks about how growing up as a black girl, society makes you feel like you have to be like the norm or whatever. You don't accept like the curl in your hair, your skin color. But she says she learned how to accept herself. And she says the only way to break away from those thoughts and to be who you truly are is to just accept your genuine self. And once you realize that you are amazing, you should go out and help younger black girls that are going through the same situation that you were going through. And she says that's a lesson like many black women are still learning. And Amanda is just a 17-year-old girl, and she's already learned it. Like, she's a lot ahead than a lot of black women out there. And it's just a lesson I feel like everybody has to learn in order to succeed in life, period. But then the topic soon becomes black hair. And in the black community, hair is a lot more than just hair. It's about, like, finding a way to love yourself and how to just be you. And I said the interview was super important because it's just black women getting their voices out. Ali mentioned earlier that it's not just black men going through these things, it's black women also. And black women have to be, like, mentioned. We are the strongest people on earth, in my opinion. We go through a lot more than other people go through. So I just feel like our voice is something that needs to be heard.
Amanda Stenberg is very popular on social media, along with a woman named Janetta Elzey. And she's just a regular woman who decided to take action in the black community. She took part in protests during whenever Trayvon Martin was killed, but didn't feel like she was making that big of an influence because she was in Ferguson, and the protests were mainly in Florida. So after Mike Brown's death, she decided to start streaming live about Ferguson and things that were happening. She met with the U.S. Attorney General and talked about Project Zero, which is a 10-point solution to end police violence, which she helped create. She's actually very popular right now because she was just featured on the cover of Essence magazine. And
So in the interview with Essence, she mentions how, like, some people may be upset with her because she's not much of a polite activist. But she says, like, if she wants to use a cuss word, she'll use a cuss word because that's how she's feeling. It's not a polite situation that she's dealing with, so why does she have to be, like, quote-unquote polite with everything? And,
Yeah, I think we have too many polite activists. We have too many people who try to be, like, politically correct and, you know, oh, yes, you know, I think that. We need to do such and such. We need someone who's just like, no, this is the problem, and this is what we should do about it. Someone who's blunt and honest and straightforward and, you know.
I feel like if you're polite about everything, not much will happen. If you're being polite, you're taking into consideration, like, everybody else's feelings. But then in certain situations like this, you have to put aside everybody else's feelings to get the point through in what you actually feel. Because if not, then what are you doing it for? Nothing's going to happen.
I feel like if you're polite, people will always find a way to politely walk all over you. And they'll always find a way to politely shoot you down and politely disagree with your ideas. And, you know, but it's all polite and politically correct.
I think it's, like, kind of such, like, a prevalent thing in the Black community, especially with Black women, because everybody wants us to be, like, cookie cutter, like, put into a mold. We have to be polite. We're too loud. But I feel like a lot of times the only way we're heard is if we're loud. And I think Janetta is, like, an extremely perfect example of, like, a woman completely denying, like, the roles that were forced upon her. And I feel that way all the time. I relate to Amandala and I relate to Janetta because recently I cut my hair off. I used to have a really big afro and I completely shaved it off and I didn't care what anybody had to say about it because I think I'm reclaiming my beauty back and I'm reclaiming my voice back and I feel like it makes me louder. It makes me, like, I articulate myself better. I feel like I'm a better person because of it, because nobody can tell me, like, how I'm supposed to say something and how I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to look like. And I think, like, a lot more, kind of like what Amandala was saying inside of her interview, a lot more young Black girls need to start claiming themselves, like, claiming their bodies, claiming their hair, claiming the person that they are, their voices, because oftentimes we're trapped behind other people, even our own Black men. And so to me, it's really important, especially in this point in my life, that I can reach back and help other young Black girls kind of do that, because oftentimes, like, girls will come up to me and say, oh my gosh, I don't think I could ever do that. But I don't think that's the case at all. I think that people tell them constantly that they can't do the things that they want to do, and so they feel trapped. They feel like they can't get anywhere after that. They feel like, oh, I have to be this certain type of way to succeed. I have to fit into a white system. I have to straighten my hair, like you said, press all of the curls out, put makeup on my face and make my nose look smaller. But honestly, when we start finding the beauty in ourselves, our problems will be solved once we feel the strength inside of our own beauty.
What you're saying definitely reminds me of this song by India Irie, and she's like, I'm not my hair, yeah. I'm the soul that lives within. And I think that's really important for Black women to know about themselves.
I wanted to add in that back to, like, the activist thing. In my personal opinion, I don't think we should wait for one person to take, like, action for us to follow what they say. I think that everyone should have their personal opinion on what should be changed. It shouldn't be up to one person and people disagree and agree with it. It should be up to every one of themselves, like, every individual, to take a stand on what they think should change, instead of, like, waiting for that one person to, you know, to call to action. You shouldn't have to wait for that point to come. You should be able to set it for yourself.
There doesn't have to be a Martin Luther, another Huey P., another, like, you know what I mean, Rosa Parks. There doesn't have to be another. It could just be you being the newest person. Like, I think a lot of times people are intimidated because they feel like they can't be the Martin Luther of a situation. They can't be this or they can't be that. But you can, honestly, I can be Ali Rose then. I can be Ali Rose and go do the things that I want to do with the situation, just like Janetta is being her. Even though we refer to her as, like, a regular person, I feel like she is a superhero just like Martin Luther and will be remembered like that, in my opinion. She doesn't have to be the same person.
I feel like we've grown up in a generation that supports keeping your voice down and supports, like, oppressing your true beliefs in order to, like, fit into the mold and for, you know, to be quote-unquote successful. I feel like, you know, a lot of people do tell their children to, like, oh, don't speak out on this, You know, you can talk to me about it. You can talk to me, but don't be an activist. Don't try to be a hero. But I think we need more people to stand up, and we need more people to be heroes and to not be afraid to speak their mind and to, you know, support maybe that off the root cause. You know what I mean?
I completely agree with everything that everybody was saying, but this concludes our segment on Black excellence, and we'll be right back.
All right, so we are going to introduce our next segment, Education Justice. We're talking about the superintendent search. So if you do not know, Dr. Linda Lane, who was the current superintendent of Pittsburgh Public Schools, is retiring at the end of the year. And so PPS is conducting a national search to find the new superintendent. If you don't know what superintendent is, it's like the CEO of like Pittsburgh Public Schools. So if we have a 2-hour delay or a school cancellation, they all those come directly from the superintendent, which is Dr. Linda Lane. We as Team Block are involved in, you know, asking specifically students what they would like to see in their new superintendent. But PBS is also conducting their own, you know, forums and asking people what they want to see. They are doing community forums. They're doing town halls. I know specifically there is a student forum January 28th at UPrep at 12:30 p.m. So, you know, if you have something to say about the super search, you can go to UPrep, and I'm sure they would be more than happy to hear your voice. I know we would. We have been interviewing students, like I said, from the 9 high schools, Brashear, UPrep, Westinghouse, and getting student opinion, because we feel that students are the most directly affected by the superintendent, so they should have the biggest say in like what they want to see in the superintendent.
And the name of that process, our interviewing process, is called Project Speak Up. We've been working on it for a couple of weeks now, and yeah.
All right, during Project Speak Up, we interviewed students and asked their personal opinion on what they would like the new superintendent to have. It was interesting to see, because most of the people that I personally interviewed, they all had similar things that they wanted to see, which was like they wanted them to care more about the students. They wanted them to make sure that the students got the education they needed. There was one student specifically, I believe he went to Westinghouse, that he said he doesn't feel that he has like the personal connection with his teachers with his teachers in order for him to get the correct education he needs. He seems to me to be a very educated young man, and one of the things that he said would be great was for the new superintendent to make sure that the teachers reached out with the students. And I think that that's like a good start to finding a new superintendent, someone who wants to connect personally with the students and teachers.
I absolutely agree with that, because being a senior at Westinghouse, it's very, very hard. I know firsthand how difficult it is to build relationships with the teachers, especially because we have class sizes that can sometimes go up to 40. I know my English class, I don't believe that there are that many people in there right now, because I think a lot of people transferred to a second one, probably because there were 45 people in the class and there was no way that you could get individualized attention. It was very, very difficult. So I think it is important for teachers to like take that extra mile and to like say, oh, you can come after school, or, you know, you can come before school. I know my math teacher, Ms. Resnick, she says you can come after or before school, and, you know, we'll talk and we'll work through, you know, whatever you're having problems with, and I think that's really important.
I know while when I was interviewing some of the students, I know a big problem that came up was, like, the teachers having favorites and not really connecting with the students on, like, a personal level, like they mentioned earlier. And it was just that they wanted the superintendent to focus more on teacher-student relationships. And it's not really happening at a lot of schools. And I know personally that happens a lot to me. I mean, I wouldn't say my school as a whole, but there's always like one teacher you feel like you can go to, but all the other teachers you don't really have a connection with. And like when you need recommendations and stuff, it would be nice to have other teachers you have a connection with, but some teachers you just can't get on that level.
It's like, I think I talked about him in our last podcast, but my history teacher, Mr. Means, like, he's probably the teacher that I would go to the most if I had any kind of question or problem, because not only is he just an amazing teacher, but he's a black man, so it's much easier for me to relate to him, I think, though, than it is to some of the other teachers, which he's like the only African-American teacher, male teacher at Westinghouse that I have. You know, I believe we have another one, Miss Turner. She's an African-American woman, but I don't believe that there are any other high school African-American teachers, which is a problem in and of itself.
Yeah, I think there's like a huge disconnect there. Just, I think most of the times when you have that, like, I guess, that awkward situation where you can't really relate to a teacher, you just don't bother and they don't bother, and like they feel like they have nothing to offer you really. And I'm noticing now, like when we did our interviews, we asked, the first question was, what are your goals? And the second question was, what is your school doing to help you fulfill your goals, or like to reach your goals? And most people couldn't exactly answer that question because most of their teachers haven't really offered them solutions to like how they would, you know, reach their goals. Like a lot of people feel like their teachers can't really talk to them about anything except for academics. And so they don't really, there's no real relationship there. And so I think like that's another thing that kind of relates back to like student teacher relationship that the superintendent should worry about is like kind of, I sort of not instructing teachers to like reach out, but like creating spaces more for like discussions that aren't 100% academic, and like, you know, bringing like kind of personal relationships into the classroom, which is like a part of restorative practices. Like, you know, taking like time out of your day to like figure out the type of people that are in your room and like learn each other's names and hear about like what each other is going through. So that way you can have like a better learning environment.
I wanted to say that I would love to share City High superintendent with the Pittsburgh Public Schools, even though I believe we are considered a Pittsburgh public school.
Quote unquote.
Yeah, that we do have our own superintendent, which I kind of like, because we don't have to deal with the same issues as Yins. Mm-hmm. Like, even it's not like a serious like issue, like, but like we don't have like to deal with, I don't know. It's kind of weird how I would say it. Because we can actually talk to our superintendent, like, every day. Because they're at the school every day.
Oh, wow.
Like, Yins can't. Our superintendent is, like, our office, basically. The office is our who make up our superintendent. And I believe our superintendent is made up by more than one person. Is it made up by more than one person? Which I think is also
It's something. Like a board.
Yeah. It's a board. They're also, yeah, our board as well.
Board
that
of directors.
That would be something nice to have, just having a superintendent who likes to connect with his students on a personal level. Because I know I've only seen Dr. Linda Lane about like 3 times, and she's been there for a while. And I'm not saying that she's done anything wrong, but it would just be nice to have a superintendent that came into like, that actually tried to connect with the students more, instead of having the superintendent. Well, we don't know much about the superintendent. Mm-hmm. There's no way to actually kind of connect to the superintendent. It's just a person we know that runs things.
It's like, it feels like if I wanted something to happen in my school, or if I wanted to have a voice in like something that's going on, there's nobody I could go to. Like if I told the teacher, they'd probably try to like just solve it in their individual classroom. If I tried to go to my principal, I'd have to like, there's so many hoops I have to jump through just to get to my principal. Like he's never available. And mm-hmm. like, if I want to go to the superintendent, I really wouldn't even know the process. So it's kind of, I'm a little bit jealous because you can literally just walk outside and like say to your superintendent, hey, these are the things that I would like to be, and if you like do enough research and like you put enough work into it, maybe it could potentially like be something. But I feel like at our school it's kind of impossible to have a voice.
But I feel like when dealing with the Pittsburgh Public Schools, you guys have so many different schools and high schools and elementary schools and middle schools, but whereas for City High, it's just one building.
Right.
So I feel like it's kind of hard to connect with so many different students in so many different areas and places in the city to be on that level with them. But I think that's why it's more important to have the teachers that you need to connect with the students on that level. That way they fill in the superintendent need, not so much that the superintendent has to, like, well, they should be able to relate to certain students or certain places and certain schools that they are in charge of, but it's more important for the teachers who are teaching these kids to relate to students that they're teaching. Because without that relation, why are you teaching and who are you really helping? Do you have favorites? And if a kid's acting up, why are they acting up? Figure out why. Maybe they have a bad home life. It's not so much that they're a bad student, but why are they really acting that way? I feel like that is more important than just, you know, sending the kid out and get suspended and miss their education.
Definitely. I feel like we're in environments that we can't flourish. Like, there's no, I feel like it's hard to, like, learn in a place where you don't feel cared about. I feel like it's hard to, like, even try to listen to a teacher that, like, you feel like doesn't understand you or doesn't respect you or, like, really doesn't care about what you're saying. The people around you are going to laugh at you, so you don't want to say certain things. You don't understand things. A lot of times people get defensive whenever they can't answer questions, so then they act out. And, like, if you had a stronger and healthier environment, you might feel more open to actually expressing yourself or learning things. So I feel like that teacher relationship with their students is extremely important. And even though the superintendent isn't going to be the exact person to have the relationship with every individual student, the superintendent could definitely play a role instructing the teachers to reach out and make better relationships with their students.
I wanted to, sorry, Jordan. I just want to clarify something really quickly. City Charter has a director, not a superintendent. I'm sorry for any, like, confusion, but we have a director.
I was just going to say, off what Allie said, like, it's hard to flourish in an environment that where you don't feel you don't care, you're not cared. But I also feel like it's hard to flourish in an environment where you don't feel safe. Whatever sense of the word that means to you, emotionally safe, physically safe. Because I know a lot, like the interviews that we did, I know a lot of the students did talk about not feeling safe at their schools. And even sometimes I don't feel safe at Westinghouse, because, like, Westinghouse, we haven't been back from, like, Christmas break for like a week. But before Christmas break, just in the month of December, we went on lockdown like 3 or 4 times, you know, for like a shooting that was down the street. And it's just like, it's scary, because it's like, what's going to stop them from coming here? You know, if they're already a block away from the school, what's going to stop them from just coming over that extra block if they feel like it and coming into the school and just, you know, shooting up a bunch of kids?
That wraps up our education justice part, and we will be right back.
If our listeners, if anyone wants to, you know, speak on this to maybe some adults or like someone in your school, I do want to mention again the student forum on January 28th at UPrep, and, you know, make sure that you attend that if you want to speak.
Also,
if you want your voice to be heard.
Oops, sorry. Also, if you definitely want to talk to us more about the topics we've been covering today, you can tweet at PGH Youth Express, and you can also tweet Team Block at Team Block or Teen_Block.
All right, that's all the time we have today. Thank you for supporting Streaming Justice. Up next is more music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day.
Don't give up the fight.